I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I don't often get real personal on this show, but, you know, I figured I'm going through this and you're going through it. Many of you have or you've gone through it, and it's just kind of a big thing in life. So I thought we would all get together and ease our pain. How's that for a description of the hour? Please bear with me. It's not terribly self-serving because I know there are other people going through this. At any rate, to get to the point, 1 month, 3 days ago, but who's counting, I officially became an empty nester. The youngest boy, Andrew, left Milwaukee for a job far away in Florida, and it has been so hard. I knew it was going to be hard, but I didn't know how kind of empty I would feel. And I know I'm not alone in my sadness. I've had many conversations with people who are going through the same thing or who have gone through it. I was moved by a Washington Post opinion piece a couple years ago, Michael Gerson's reflections on when he dropped his son off at college. "This is the worst thing that time has done to me so far," he wrote. The moment at the dorm is implied, at the kindergarten door, at the gates of summer camp, at every ritual of parting and independence. But it comes as surprising as a thief taking what you value the most. So I thought, why not help each other this hour and get advice from a psychologist? Guy Winch is our guest. He's a TED speaker, a psychologist, the author of many books, most recently Emotional First Aid, Healing Rejection, Guilt, Failure, and Everyday Hurts. His TED Talk, Why We All Need to Practice Emotional First Aid, is rated among the top five most inspiring talks on TED.com. So we're going to be talking with him and welcoming phone calls. You know, let's talk about it. Those of you who are going through it or have been through it, it's surprising what gets stirred up as a result of having your last child leave home and what happens to your life as a result of that. So please call, will you? Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we are on Twitter as well. Use those, particularly Facebook. Love to hear from you on Facebook. Twitter is @KDunnShow. That should take care of all of the ways that you can communicate with us. And we're very happy to have some advice from a psychologist with us. We thank you so much, Dr. Guy Winch, for being with us. Hello.
Thank you for having me. Hello.
Hello. I got to tell you, I knew that it was going to be hard to have the youngest boy go away, and particularly so far away. But a couple weeks before he left, I just found myself crying when I was talking about it. And then when he left, ooh-wee, it has been, I'm a little better now. It's 1 month and 4 days later, but it is a very hard thing to do. The house is lonely. It's just, you know, me and the dog. My husband is traveling a lot, and it's such a change in so many ways, and it just brings up all these memories, and you think you're prepared for it, but you think about, you know, the best years, your most productive years of being a parent, which is so wonderful, are over, and, oh, the depths of emotion are unbelievable.
You know, that's absolutely true, and what's interesting about it is it's one of the things we all see coming. You know, we kind of know about when it's supposed to happen, and even when, you know, son, I think you said, you know, your son got a job, but even then he got the job, there was some kind of notice that this is coming, and most people feel totally unprepared when it actually hits, because it's a big blow. It's symbolically a big blow. This is the end of a certain chapter. It's a big blow in terms of just the actual loss of someone that's going to be that's not going to be around and as available as they were.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a huge blow in terms of our basic identity and how we feel about ourselves. So it does things in pretty much every, you know, possible aspect of our lives.
And it is true, isn't it, Dr. Winch, that being a parent is such an involved process for so many years. Just the amount of contact and what you do with your child and for your child and in helping them grow is really elaborate. It just is consuming.
Right. And look, psychologically speaking, you can measure loss or the impact of loss based on how much space that took up in our lives.
Yes. So
the actual time, mm-hmm. the emotional space, the intellectual space. And there's nothing bigger, really, than parenting in terms of that space and how much it takes up. So there's a huge, huge loss involved when we have to give up huge chunks of that. Obviously, you're still a parent, you'll still be in touch, but the degree and the extent of certain things is going to be much decreased, and that therefore it's a huge loss.
Mm-hmm. You've talked about, and I don't know how you can do this, preparing yourself for the moment that is inevitable, perhaps much earlier than the day that it becomes a reality.
And I think this is a principle that I think is very important in psychology in general, in our psychology, in the sense that it's always best to replace a void before the void is upon you. In other words, when there's going to be this gaping hole in terms of your time and your life and your emotions and your relationships and your self-definition and all those things, it's really important, or it's best, to start filling that up beforehand. This is true of empty nest, it's true of retirement, it's true of those kinds of moments in our lives, those kinds of events that take something away without necessarily replacing. And loss is one of those, of course. And so to the extent that you can start planning for that, filling in that void, figuring out who you're going to be or what you're going to expand, what aspects of yourself you can expand, what aspects of your marital relationship or your partnership, if you have one, what aspects of your work life or of your social life, you know, you really have to start thinking about what's going to fill that hole way before it happens.
Mm-hmm. And how do you make those? There's so much that could fill that hole. How do you decide it? How do you decide what it is you do? If you work with children, or if you become a volunteer with the elderly, or if you go into work much more heavily, or travel with your spouse or your friends, how in the world do you figure it all out?
So what I recommend to people, just a very concrete exercise, is I tell them to draw a pie chart and divide it up into the different aspects of themselves in their daily life. So there's themselves as a parent, they're themselves as a partner or a spouse, themselves as a sibling or as a friend, their professional careers, their hobbies, you know, the different aspects of themselves. And once they've divided it accordingly, so parenting is usually a big chunk, and if there's a relationship, that's a big chunk. Work is obviously a very big chunk. And so they divide it up, however, it doesn't really matter how exact, but you divide it up. And then if you're going to take away that chunk that's parenting, which of the other chunks do you think you need to expand, or you could expand, or what chunks could be added? What are some of the things you've always wanted to do that you've never tried? And really what's important here is that nothing is going to seem compelling, because really what's going to replace your kid? Pottery? No.
No, right.
That's not going to do enough.
I know.
So it's not going to feel like it's going to be that important when you're doing it, certainly if you're doing it ahead of time. But over time, once we invest in things and once we stay with things, we get more attached to them and they become more significant. So I'm just using pottery as a silly example, but if you're doing pottery, you know, maybe the first time you do it, you'll be like, well, I don't know how this is going to replace, you know, all the time I used to spend with my kid. But, you know, maybe by the 10th time when you're starting to create things, when you're starting to feel more invested or, you know, enjoying it more, mm-hmm. that will have more of an impact. And that's why you have to start ahead of time, so that there are some things that are already in place when the actual move-out happens.
And what about for the child who is left? What makes it easier for him or her? How often you should be in contact? Do you give them a lot of time to really develop their own lives? Do you text every day and say, how's it going, or five times a day, or do you wait once a week? What makes it easier?
Look, it's such a difficult question. What makes it easier for them, by the way, is that they've been preparing for this way ahead of time, right? Because they,
yes.
you know, as young adults and as teenagers, they've already been, you know, segueing away from, you know, parents and home and toward friends and social circles as being their primary, you know, group. And so they have much more preparation in place. They're excited about starting. Yes, they might be homesick if they left home, and yes, they might miss you, but it's always easier mm-hmm. to leave rather than be the one who's leaving,
mm-hmm.
I think, as a principle in life. And so they're the ones who are leaving. It's a little bit easier for them. But, you know, it really depends on the nature of the relationship and on who the child, adult, young adult, rather, we should say, who the young adult is, and what's the nature of the relationship. Because if you are someone who is very, very involved and you're concerned about whether they'll be sufficiently independent and they're worrying about it, maybe I would give them a little bit more space. If they're somebody, you know, who you're very close with, but they've been independent before, they've done their year abroad in college or something, so you know they can manage, you know. But ultimately, I always say, if it's the relationship is close enough, ask. Say, look, I'm going to miss you. I'm going to want to call every day. What's reasonable for you? I don't want to, you know, I want to give you space. Tell me what would work for you.
Mm-hmm.
Just have the conversation.
Mm-hmm. And then there's the other thing that you, when you're in the position of your last child leaving home, you're also in the position of figuring out you probably don't have as much left of your life as you've already lived. And so it can, for me, bring forward, what am I going to do with these years? They're not as many as I've already had, and I better do something that's worthwhile and important. And it just sort of, all of that hits you at the same time.
Absolutely. And look, I mean, it's true that, you know, you might not have as many as you've lived, but we probably have a few decades in us, you know, at the point the kids are leaving home, hopefully, mm-hmm. or certainly, you know, a couple, two, three, whatever more decades, there's a lot of time.
Right.
And so if you think about it, you know, it's not, oh, how am I going to fill up the next couple of years? It's like, really, what is it going to be about for me now? Or, you know, how do I want to fill this void? What do I want the rest of my life to be about? And, you know, you're posing these questions, they're the absolute correct questions to pose, but they're very, very significant. They're very existential. They're very large. And I always say that it's going to be really difficult to come up with the right answer. It's going to be much less difficult to explore potential answers. And so I think the mindset has to be, unless you know, some people know, oh, yeah, when that happens, I'm going to do this specific thing I've been thinking about for 20 years, but most people don't know. And then I say, explore. Just try things. You know, it can be take 2 years to just explore
mm-hmm.
all kinds of different things. You don't have to have the answer, and don't wait until you get the thing, oh, yes, this is the thing, because there might not be the thing.
Mm-hmm.
There might be things you discover. So I think it's about exploration.
Mm-hmm. And is it kind of natural and okay to be kind of in a funk after your child leaves? Should you get worried about yourself if too much time goes by, and how much time might that be before you stop feeling just pretty darn sad?
Look, if you and I are speaking next year, and you'll say, well, now it's been 13 months and 4 days, I think you'll need to move on.
I think you're right.
But at a month and 4 days, I think it's perfectly fair to be counting, because it's a big loss. And, you know, loss takes time. And this is one of the things, you know, I write in the chapter about loss in my book. We have misconceptions about how to handle it. We believe, because we're told, or that's our understanding from psychology, that you must talk about it when you experience loss. Otherwise, you can't just keep it all bottled in. And that's not correct, because what's actually correct is that there are some people who want to talk about it and who will really feel the need to talk about it with friends, tell them they're feeling sad, tell them they're feeling empty, tell them they're really missing their kid, tell them they just spent the last night sleeping in their kid's bed. I mean, these things happen. So if that's how you're feeling and you want to talk about it, you should absolutely talk about it. However, if you don't want to talk about it, if you're the kind of person who just wants to get on with things and not dwell, and that's your natural instinct, you should be allowed to do that, because for you, for that kind of person, being forced to talk about it can actually create more of an emotional wound than would be there otherwise. And so it's basically, what's your natural tendency? Respond to that. The problem is that if there's a couple, say, a husband and wife, or, you know, two parents, and one of them wants to talk and the other one wants to move on with it, then it can be a little bit tricky, because, you know, the person who wants to talk wants to obviously talk to the other parent about it. The other parent wants to just, like, you know, soldier on, and that would be best for them if they could. But then again, it should be a discussion about, we'll talk about it a little, but maybe you can also reach out to your friends, because I want to just keep, you know, like, moving forward. To me, dwelling will make me very sad, and
yes.
I'd be less sad if I don't dwell.
Yeah. Oh, you're so helpful already. I feel better already.
Okay, good.
Yeah, it's good. Let's welcome phone calls. We'll take them for our guest, Dr. Guy Winch. He's a licensed psychologist, keynote, and TED speaker, and author of many, many books. The most recent, Emotional First Aid, Healing Rejection, Guilt, Failure, and Every Other Everyday Hurts. His TED Talk, Why We All Need to Practice Emotional First Aid, has been viewed 3.5 million times and is rated among the top 5 most inspiring talks on TED.com. He writes for the Squeaky Wheel blog on psychologytoday.com and blogs for the Huffington Post. All right, all you empty nesters, let's talk. Phone lines are busy right now. Keep the number in your head, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk at WPR.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter is at K Dunn Show, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to phone calls. Empty nesting is what we're talking about this hour. Chris in Two Rivers, our first caller. Hi, Chris.
Yes, thank you. I thought I was well prepared for it. I always said make sure you spend as much time and have as much fun as you can with your kids when they're young, because you only have one chance.
Yeah.
But when I had to leave my son, I took him out to Wyoming, and I thought I was abandoning him. I just felt so terrible, you know. And, and a matter of fact, Puff the Magic Dragon, I felt like Puff the Magic Dragon, you know. I lost my pal. But it turned out so much different than I expected, because gave us an opportunity to come out there and visit and see things and tour the states and did it all with him. And it was kind of like a second experience that we really enjoy.
Oh, that's good. And you're still pals, right?
Oh, yeah. I still miss having him here as a companion, but we've got a different kind of closeness now.
Yeah. Dr. Winch, he seems to be, Chris, handling this okay.
Yes, and I think that's a very good progression, Chris, that you're describing, because it's about shifting the nature of the relationship, you know, once your kids are adult and once they're, you know, living independently and living lives of their own. Then you can switch the nature. It can be a more balanced relationship. You go out to visit them. They show you around. Suddenly they're the leader. They're the ones who are hosting you rather than vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that sounds like a nice segue into a more equal relationship. I mean, you'll always be the parent. They'll always come to you and their issues. But the other point I want to point out is that in these kinds of situations, because it's, you know, Wyoming, when you're going to go visit, you might actually spend more intense quality time as a chunk.
Mm-hmm.
Than
that's
you
true.
Would if they were more local, because you're visiting, because it's a special visit, they'll usually make time for you when you come. So you can really end up having wonderful experiences that you might not have if your kid leaves 30 minutes away down, you know, across town. And so you'll see each other, but not for that. You know, they don't spend the night. There's no reason for them to. But when you go visit now, you might spend a whole week together. Certainly when they have kids, that might happen. So it opens the door to a new kind of relating and a new kind of experience. And Chris sounds like he's definitely on the path to that.
Yes, he does. Thank you, Chris, so much for your call. David in Madison, hi.
Hi. I put a little different perspective on this. I hope it's relative. But there is a lot to look forward to after your children leave. You start looking through the world through their eyes, and then if you're fortunate enough, you have grandchildren that are close by, and whether it's a reflection on me or not, I find that I'm a better grandfather than I was a parent, because I don't have all the day-to-day chores and worries and everything on my mind, and I'm just loving the experience. I'm fortunate that they live close by.
Yes, you are. I hear that it's one wonderful experience for many. Dr. Winch.
I think the grandparent, you know, to become a grandparent, I think is a wonderful opportunity, because you know, between the time that your child leaves home and when they have children of their own, they don't usually need you as much. But the minute they start having a newborn in the house, boy, do they need you.
Right.
They could use the help. They could use the advice. They could use the phone call. They could use all of it. And they could certainly use longer visits because, you know, it gives them a break. And so I think there's amazing opportunities there to be had. And certainly, I mean, you're right, David, in that being a grandparent is significantly easier. It's like you get so many of the benefits of being a parent with so much fewer of the responsibilities. So on balance, it's wonderful.
Yes.
Like you said, you don't have to do a lot of the, you're not up at 4 a.m, you know, you don't have to do so much of the work, but you get to really play with your grandchildren, enjoy them and watch them grow and interact and be a significant part of their lives. And often what happens is that your young adult children, and maybe even adult at that point, obviously, will come to appreciate you in a very qualitatively different way once they have kids of their own. That lesson of, oh, this is not as easy as I thought, training comes across very strongly. And so that also opens all kinds of doors for opportunities.
It sure isn't easy, is it? It is just such a hard thing to do in life. It's one of the hardest, I think. Thanks, David, so much for your call. Jared in Stoughton. Hi, Jared.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a different twist on this. I am not an empty nester. I'm years from that. But what I am is a divorced father, and I have to have the emptiness syndrome every 3.5 days.
Mm.
And I find myself wondering what I'm going to do those 3 days.
Oh.
It's an odd situation, you know. There's a lot of freedom, but there's also that, you know, there's no one coming in and out of the house.
Right.
Dinner for your daughter, you know, whatnot, and you're kind of just taking care of yourself, but then it starts all over again. It's a very odd situation.
I'm sure it is. Dr. Winch, help him.
So, look, I mean, I think that you're absolutely right that when you're a divorced parent, and you're certainly, it sounds like you have, like, splitting custody, it sounds like, so you have that mini episode every week on a weekly basis. But certainly as a divorced father, you need to start rebuilding your life. And that means you have 3 days to rebuild your social life. I didn't hear, perhaps you've already, maybe you're in a new relationship already. If you're not, then you certainly have some time to make one. And I think that it's a hard transition because you have to get over the loss a little bit first. But then you really have to use that time to rebuild your life and create a more complete life post-divorce. And that means, you know, going out into the dating world, and it means going out more into the social world, and it means really trying to rebuild, because in a divorce, there was a lot of loss. You lost not just the spouse, but a lot of the social activities that go with that, all kinds of things. And so this is your opportunity to rebuild that aspect of your life. And I'm hoping that if you are not in a relationship, you will consider then using the free time you have to actually go out and date and start a new chapter.
How does that sound? Are you doing that, Jared?
I am. I actually got on to a dating site and have had a couple of those dates. So
good.
Definitely an avenue I'm pursuing, and it seems like that is helping. You know, there is a void that needs to be filled. And
right. Now, it's a very different thing, right? I mean, because you're filling, you know, the parenting thing with dating, it's a very different experience. But the fundamental truth is, I'm glad you've started that process, because ultimately you do have to rebuild. You do probably want to find someone, and obviously there's no rush, and you should be very, you know, cautious about how you, you know, introduce that person when you do find them to your children, and make sure you're introducing another person into their lives when you're on pretty solid ground in terms of the relationship, so that you're not introducing somebody new every 2 months to them. But it is an opportunity to really focus back on yourself and use those 3.5 days where you're not parenting to be a kinder and gentle parent to yourself, and be supportive and encourage yourself to go out and rebuild and really recreate fully this next chapter.
Mm. Thank you, Doctor.
Thanks, Jared. Thanks so much for your call. Virginia in Green Bay. Hi, Virginia.
Hi.
Hi.
I have kind of a weird situation. I have a son that the first inkling that we knew was when they were getting married, and the mother-in-law came up to us and told us to stick to our own kind. And we have a very small family because we lost some people through death, and we just never had a large family to begin with. And I didn't quite understand what was going on. And then later on, we got a call from our son. And what they wanted was money for our part of the wedding. And what we were supposed to do is just stay away, but send the money.
Not go to the wedding?
Yeah.
Okay. So what did you do?
And so what we did was we said, well, we'll pay for it, but we're coming anyhow.
Mm-hmm. Virginia, I have to move you along with the story. I understand that it's complicated, but what's the result of all of this? Do you see your son?
No.
You don't see your son?
No. He won't speak to us. And for almost 20 years now.
Oh, my gosh.
And we have tried to have other people go up to him and try and find out what's wrong.
Oh, this is a hard one. Dr. Winch.
Yes, this is a hard one. But obviously what you're saying is that these problems are 20 years, you know, old. In other words, whatever the disconnect was, whatever their reasons, whatever your son's reason is or was and is, that still, for not speaking with you, dates back a long time. I wasn't sure whether this already happened. Did the wedding happen already?
Oh, yeah, a long time ago.
Okay, so this was a while ago, yeah. Because to me, that's an opportunity when that kind of thing happens. I mean, it's too late for you now, but for other people in that scenario, You know, if you are estranged from your adult child and they call and say, oh, I'm getting married, how about you pitch in for the wedding? To me, it's not something you need to answer yes or no, but to me, that's an opportunity to have dialogue and to maybe, you know, try and fix part of the relationship by saying, you know, happy to talk about it. Let's get together and discuss exactly what your needs
right.
are. And in other words, I would look for opportunities to amend the relationship, which obviously needs mending. And, you know, and I don't know the circumstance here, but it's always a very unfortunate thing when that happens. I would just look for opportunities to mend. My personal suggestion would be to, you know, try I would send birthday cards. I would, you know, I would call, you know, on occasions. I would, on holidays, I would wish happy holiday. I would constantly make efforts to show I'm thinking of you,
mm-hmm.
and I hope at some point you'll come around and be willing to communicate. But I would, you know, I wouldn't call on a daily basis, obviously, but I would call on birthdays. I would call on holidays. I would send a card. I would try and show we're thinking of you.
Yes.
And leave the door open, I think, is the best you can do in that scenario at the moment.
Oh, it's a sad one.
More of the detail.
Thank you, Virginia, so much for your call. Dorothy in Cudahy. Hi, Dorothy.
Hi. Kathleen, Dottie Cooker here.
Hi.
I remember volunteering for public radio.
Uh-huh.
Making telephone calls.
Uh-huh.
And going skating with you, and I think it was Andrew at Red Arrow Park.
Oh my gosh.
It was just wonderful memories. And Ben Marins, and it was just wonderful. Wonderful memories, and I just wanted to share that with you.
Oh, that's great. Thank
okay.
you. Thanks, Dottie, for your call. Thank you. Let's go to Lynn in Coloma. Hi, Lynn.
I was a teacher for 20 years, and I found it very alarming to find that there were mothers of 10-year-olds at fifth grade standing outside the window, peeking in.
Oh, dear.
And standing around the playground to watch their children. And I remember having to take mothers on the shoulders and shaking them and saying, do you realize in 4 years he will have a beard, he will have hairy legs, he will have underarm hair. You need to let him be a child. You need to let him go. And I think I did a very great job with my own children, which happened to be girls, but these girls went on to go to college and it wasn't a big deal. I tried to prepare them from the time they were born to be independent people.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't get this whole mentality today that, oh, my gosh, they're in their 20s, and I need to still be there, still be there, still be there.
Yeah, well, that's pretty wild. Have somebody in fifth grade, and mom's still at the playground. I can't imagine that's real common. Dr. Winch, is it?
I wouldn't say it's not. It's uncommon. In other words, I think parents, I mean, I'll tell you one story. I used to work, you know, many, many years ago with this family, and the child had this illness in which they had constant dry eyes. And it was a dangerous situation. They had to put in drops and you know, moisturize on a regular basis, otherwise they could have problems with their vision. And there was one mother that, you know, I found out in the course of the therapy, she would, before every class, sneak into the classroom and spray it with moisture so it'll be more humidified.
Oh.
And until the school caught her.
Oh.
Like this teacher did. And probably shook her by the shoulders and told her he'll have, you know, hair on his legs. But I think that it's difficult to let go because we're, you know, you're attached. You love your child.
Yes.
Good relationship with them.
Yes.
You're actually really enjoying it.
Yes.
You know, and so it's a loss. It's a really difficult thing to let go. It's, again, easier for the kids. And I think it's very important to focus on raising independent children. But I know many parents who've raised really independent children, but they're so close to them and they still have such a hard time when they leave.
Right. Right.
So you can do a perfect job in raising, you know, an independent child, and you did your job really well in the sense that your child will have a much easier time leaving home. You might not.
Yeah.
And so I think, though, but it is this gradual process, so you have to start realizing, you know, when they hit high school, those kinds of things, oh, the time is coming near, there's just a few more years, I have to start thinking about, you know, what the substitutions are going to be for me.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's hard to miss. It's true when people die, too, that you can miss somebody so much because you love them so much and you enjoyed their company. And to have people live all over different parts of the country and different parts of the world, so it's harder to get together more often. It's just a hard thing in life to say goodbye.
Look, it's a very hard thing to say goodbye. And here's, I do have to say one word about technology, because, you know, I live in New York. You can tell from my accent I wasn't born in New
right.
York. And so I came here from somewhere else, and I left, you know, and I left my family to come here. It was very, very difficult.
Mm.
I did that. There was no internet. There were no video chats and FaceTime, and now we have these virtual reality goggles
yes.
that are coming out, and people
They're
will
great.
Literally be able to, in a few years' time, I mean, this is not fiction, they'll be able to put these headsets on and sit literally in the room, you know, with the person that they're missing on the other side of the world. And so I think that we can really use technology to be present for certain kinds of events and to really interact in ways we weren't able to before, and we should actually find that as comfort. Now, not a substitution. It doesn't mean that you then orient your life around the next time you're allowed to kind of FaceTime with your kid. It means you need to get on with the task of filling your own life, you know,
right.
into that void. But it is, you know, that somebody's going away. It's not as if now I have to wait 6 months for that letter to arrive by pony. You know, we're in much more touch, and we can be much more a part of people's lives, you know, with chat groups and text groups and all these things that really allow us to feel that we can be there and involved in the big moment.
Right. How true. That's a good thing to remember, Dr. Winch, because it's frequently crossed my mind when you go to the graves of ancestors or think about people who are all immigrants who came over and left Europe or left whatever part of the world where we had to make a leave for whatever reason, and we just knew we would never get home again. And
never see them again, right?
Imagine that. Imagine
it was only 100 years ago. And even
I know.
And we're in such a different reality now. It's true.
Right. Yeah. Okay, thanks very much for the call. Let's go to Christina in Glenwood City. Hi, Christina.
Hi there. Thank you. When my son turned 18, he moved out of state, and I was so sad. And then I thought, hey, wait a minute. I'm free. So I started showing horses, absolutely loved it, made new friends. My son has since moved back. He owns a business. We are best friends. We now travel together every year with the goal of visiting every state in the U.S.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
It's wonderful. I absolutely love it. But, Kathleen, my suggestion to you is, as a dog lover, you might want to consider getting into, say, obedience.
I'm
or
going to.
Year.
Right.
Something fun with your dog.
Yeah, yeah.
And redirect your focus.
No doubt about that. I have a very elderly dog right now who I have to carry. He's getting very old, so I've got that going on too, because I'm really also very attached to my dog.
Mm-hmm.
But I am going to do that, and I know that will be something that I've been planning on doing, Christina, for a long time. Yeah, that will be good.
Yes.
So
life is an adventure as they grow up, and then you come back together, and you can enjoy each other's company.
Yeah, great story, Christina. Thanks so much for the call. Karma on Facebook writes this, Doctor, I think it's important that the child not be made to feel guilty for moving on. We raise them to be independent and competent, and we need to recognize their efforts and accomplishments and not make them feel sad for making us sad.
Look, super important comment. Excellent, excellent, super important comment. And here's the thing I'm going to say to people, and some people might disagree, but here's what I always recommend. So, you know, if you're home and sitting in your child's room sobbing and the phone rings and it's them, I want Oscar-worthy performances of, no, I'm having the best possible time. No, I'm about to go out to dinner with friends. No, it's terrific. How are you doing? Absolutely lie through your teeth about you're fine. They should not be worrying about you. Because,
right.
You know, the woman that just called, I forgot her name. But
Christina.
The point is, she must have done a wonderful job at letting go, because that's when, you know, he could come back and not feel smothered and create this new relationship with their friends and traveling together. So it's really important in terms of the long-term prospect of the relationship that in the short term you really try and let go and let them deal with their independence without having to use you as an excuse of, well, I didn't do that because I was worried about you. No. Don't be worried about me. You get on with your life. I'm fine. Has to
right.
be the message. I do want to say, if I may, just one quick thing about pets.
Yes.
Because I think that's really important. They did, and I'm going to mention this quick study, if I may. They did the study where they asked, they gave visits to people who were lonely and housebound. And they had three formats for the visit. They were visited by a social worker, with a dog, and by the dog alone.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were asked to rate which one they would want a second visit from. And it was the dog. Now, here's why it was the dog. The dog is easy. The dog, you know, if you're feeling upset and somebody's coming to visit and you don't know what to say or what you want them to say or how to communicate about it, should you say it, should you not, should you get into it, should you not? No questions like that with the dog.
Mm-hmm.
You just, you know, the dog is fun and cuddly and loving and loyal, and you can just enjoy the dog. And so pets have a huge significance, I think. And oftentimes, I think the idea, especially if it's a single parent, and even if you're going about, you know, rebuilding your life, but just to keep the house less empty, I think a dog or a cat can be wonderful substitutions and wonderful fillers that can be very worthwhile, especially dealing with loneliness in addition to the
other. Yeah, I'm with you all the way on that one. Our guest is Dr. Guy Winch. We're talking about empty nesting this hour of the program. He's a licensed psychologist, a keynote and TED speaker, author of many books, Emotional First Aid, Healing Rejection, Guilt, Failure, and Every Other Everyday Hurts. His TED Talk, Why We All Need to Practice Emotional First Aid, is rated among the top 5 most inspiring talks on TED. He does the Squeaky Wheel blog on psychologytoday.com and blogs for Huffington Post. And we're welcoming phone calls. Lines have been busy. You can get through right now if you'd like to try. The number is 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. And you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Dolores is next in Kenosha. Hi, Dolores.
Oh, hello. I've had so many thoughts going through my head since I've been listening to all the wonderful people. Tomorrow I'm going to see a cardiovascular surgeon because I need a wedge resection because I have cancer in one of my lungs, and I'm taking my youngest daughter with me. But I'm thinking of all my children, and we let them go. But they didn't go that far away. They stay connected with us. And we kind of, you got to let them morph. And they become wonderful. And that's why I feel so supported. And this is a wonderful program, and thank you so much.
Thank you, Dolores. I hope the things go well for you. Thanks.
It will.
Good,
bye-bye.
Good. Thanks. Thanks for the call. All right, Elizabeth in La Pointe. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hello. Thanks for taking my comment.
Sure.
I just, I'm sitting here. I had several children. I had 4 children, and we had great adventures. They're all, you know, in their 30s now. My oldest is 36. My youngest will be 30 soon. And there was a couple of experiences I had. One was one of my sons enlisted in the Marines while he was in high school.
Mm.
And that was a different sort of loss for
mm-hmm.
me that was combined with fear,
yes.
of course, and distance, just an ability to stay in communication and not knowing, you know, how he would be cared for, you know, all those concerns.
Right.
But the other kinds of experiences were more, I think, you know, normal, kind of going off and doing your own thing and getting your own place or moving to a different state or whatnot. And I realized that at one point my reaction was almost one of just jealousy, because I felt like, because we had such a good life together,
mm-hmm.
such great kids, often referred to them as without them, I don't know how I would have made it in many circumstances. They were really my rock rather than the other way around, I felt, many times. But I realized one day that it was the reason it was so difficult for me at times was because I was jealous of what they were doing. I couldn't be there to experience what they were experiencing and see their reactions and enjoy the, you know, whatever they were doing with them. Whereas before, we were always together when they were little. You know, we did a lot of traveling around the world and had a lot of cultural experiences and a lot of exposure to different lifestyles and whatnot. But they were going on, and they were going to be having their own adventures. And I thought, wow, how am I ever going to keep up with all of them and what they're, who they're meeting and the different kinds of people that they're meeting and what they're experiencing and their attitudes and reactions to those, you know, those kinds of things. So for me, that was kind of an aha moment for me.
So did you, Elizabeth, add some of that in your life? So you'd have those more experiences yourself?
Exactly. Oh, yeah. I knew that their lives were going to be rich and incredible, as my life had been. I was also a world traveler, if that's what you're asking. But
no, I mean, once they left, did you do something so that you could have some of the experiences that they were having, only they were your own experiences?
Course.
Yeah.
Nothing can stop me from keeping on.
Right.
I have my own, you know, my own adventures and new interests and artistic endeavors. And actually, when the last child, the boomerang, which would be another conversation perhaps sometime, when the last child left home and then came back and then left again and finally was comfortable in her situation, we actually moved.
Oh, my.
We left, we moved to Madeline Island, and now it's them who get to come see us.
Nice.
So I think that's a opportunity for them to, you know, check out our adventure.
But yeah, thank you so much for the call. Well, they're doing all right, Dr. Winch.
They're doing great.
Yeah.
And I do have a suggestion based on that, because look, the families who have experiences together like that, as the kids are growing up, you know, you said you traveled the world together, you had all these experiences. Now, look, there's some families, if you mention two words to them, family vacation, they'll run in horror because it just never works for them. Whatever it was, family vacations were horrific. And there are families in which they really enjoyed family vacations together when the kids were growing up. Now, to me, those families, the second class of families, and sometimes even the first, there's no reason, you can't probably do it every year, but at a certain point when all of the kids are in a similar life stage of raising children and all of that, you should do vacations and have experiences together. Every once in a while, organize the big, big family trip where everyone's getting the experiences together. I don't see a reason why that can't continue happening. Logistically, it's difficult to do. You have four kids, they have spouses, they have other kids. But I think I know many, many families who travel together as adults, you know, and bring the grandchildren. And they still have those family vacations, maybe every 3 years, 5 years, once every 10 years, whatever it is. But they, families who can have adventures and experiences together, there's no reason to stop.
No. Thank you so much, Elizabeth, for the call. Dana in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi there.
Hi.
So I'm a ballroom dance instructor.
Nice.
And I find that some of my favorite students are empty nesters. They're people who've been used to putting their energy into their children, and when they come in, they've got all this extra energy in so many different facets that they can then put into themselves, and I just find it's really a healthy thing for them.
Dr. Winch.
I have recommended many times as one of the first things couples to do when they become empty nesters, if they're still together, is take a ballroom dancing class.
Really?
Together. Because if you want to, because A, I think it makes you feel younger. I think it reintroduces some spice, if you get my drift, into the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And a certain way, I mean, ballroom dancing, especially Latin dancing, and some kind of, I mean, they can be very sexy, intimate, you know, fun, really kind of experiences. And so if a couple wants to kind of reinvent themselves, because I've been saying you have to reinvent yourself as an individual, but it's actually a good time to comment that the couple has to do that as well. As a couple, you probably have been more mommy and daddy than husband and wife with one another. And so it would be a good time to get back to husband and wife and to, you know, reconnecting or recharging things in terms of intimacy and in terms of other kinds of dynamics. And actually, ballroom dancing is sexy, it's cooperative, it's something you can do together. It's a great thing to explore.
All right. Thanks so much for your call. Janet in Milwaukee. Hi.
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 I wanted to, in a way, commiserate, but also respond. I and my husband had two daughters, raised them to break the glass ceiling, go for whatever they wanted do. Very intelligent, very talented girls who went to school wherever they wanted to go and took whatever classes they wanted to take. So now 36 and 41 years old, my husband is dead. And what the 36-year-old I haven't heard anything from in 11 years, and the 41-year-old, I might get a text from her every once in a while, sometimes not. I never know when I'm going to hear from her, and we don't see each other, so I can commiserate on that level.
Why don't you see each other, Janet?
Pardon me?
Why don't you see each other?
The last time I saw the youngest one, here is the point I wanted to make. By having an open wallet, by saying, you can do anything. You want to go to art school in New York? We're going to make that happen. And so I've had this discussion with other people. So, A, I now feel like they got too much without having to, well, I mean, they had to use themselves, but other than, you know, I mean, they did have jobs and stuff like that, but it was never enough. So I feel like I gave them too much. And secondly, now all my friends have grandchildren, or children who they see or speak with frequently.
All right. I need to hold you there because we have so many incoming calls. Is there a way? That would be sort of an unacceptable, not sort of, it would be an unacceptable situation for me as a mom. Is there a way for her to reconnect with her children? Does she have a point, Dr. Winch, that she gave them too much?
So, I mean, without really knowing much more about it, I can't say if that's true. Look, I mean, it sounds like you tried to give them as much as you could, and I really applaud you for that. There are many different things that can go wrong in relationships, and some of them might have to do with you, and some of them might not. And so it's very difficult to say what that disconnect was about without hearing more.
Right.
I certainly can say that, when it's about giving too much or not, in terms of fostering independence, in terms of limiting senses of entitlement, I think you should give, but I think things should also be earned by kids. When they're raised, they should be participating in chores, they should be working, they should be understanding the value of contributing to a household. I think in terms of reconnecting, the best you can do is try and reach out and initiate a talk about what went wrong, and maybe you can have a discussion about it. But it'd be very hard for me to go with that.
Yes, yeah, there's a lot there. Lynn on Facebook writes, it's long been my contention, if you do your job as a parent well, you do yourself out of a job. Your children are not yours forever. They're independent beings. It's your job to make sure that's what they become. When our boys moved out on their own, we were pleased to know we'd done the best we could and that they were now on their own. They've become adults, contributing to society in their own ways, and we couldn't be prouder of them. The empty nest means that we have the freedom to come and go as we choose, and to have pancakes for dinner if we want.
And her kids are going to say, now you have pancakes for dinner when
we're there? I'm sure they are. Why not early?
But it's true. If you do your job really well, then they will leave and be happy and independent. But if you do your job really well and they're happy and independent, they should be in touch with you and they should have a relationship with you and they should involve you very much in their own parenting of their own children.
Yeah. One more phone call, almost out of time. Barbara in Dodgeville. Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I have two children, a son and a daughter. When my son went to school, I would volunteer at the school. And I volunteered a lot, because I would work nights and then I would have my days free to go hang out at school. And the kids thought I worked there because I was there so often. So they thought I was like another teacher or something. But but I hung out there for the first 4 years.
Don't have much time, about 10 seconds.
And when my daughter went to school, then I would hang out with them too. But when they got to middle school, they said, Mom, that's okay. you know, you can stay home now. You don't right. have to come to school.
There comes a point when it's time to branch out on your own, and our children know that as well. Dr. Winch, thank you so much for being with us. I hope you return. It was just a really good hour. Thank you.
It was an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, our pleasure. Dr. Guy Winch, licensed psychologist, talking about empty nesting. Please leave your comments on our Facebook page. We'd like to hear those as well. Thanks very much to Chris Molina for producing this interesting hour, and thanks to Kendra Smith for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. Until tomorrow, primary day in Wisconsin, big day. We won't talk politics. We'll wait till Wednesday for that, but hope you'll join us again tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Thank you very much for listening.